Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, December 26, 2024. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, First Lego League, Johns Hill's founding coach ends tenure. Bartimus stepping away after starting team in 2011. Dennis Lab School team advances by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Robotics is the least important aspect of the first Lego League activities, but it's also the one that grabs the kids' attention. My older sister was in the year before me, and I thought it was pretty cool, said Parker Springer, a seventh grader who is the Johns Hill Magnet School's most experienced programmer. The programming is my main area, but I still do a little bit of the research. I like it because it gives my brain something to do. Robotics is used as a tiebreaker if teams are even on points otherwise, where student-built robots complete tasks laid out by First Lego League, guided and programmed by the students. Johns Hill's First Lego League began in 2011 under the direction of retired Decatur Public Schools teacher Liz Bartimus, who taught science at Johns Hill. We were the only team in the city at that time, Bartimus said. It had to build, but then it fell off. It's a lot of time for the coaches and the kids. We started last spring trying to recruit, and we started intensively the first day of school. And we go until Christmas break. And if they qualify for state competition, we go to the end of January. After she retired, Bartimus continued to work with Johns Hill's team as a volunteer because she believes in the program. But this year will be her last, she said. Her family needs her, with several relatives having health issues, and she has a new grandchild on the way as well. Kim Miller, a teacher at Johns Hill, has been Bartimus's co-coach for several years and jokes that she's not ready for Bartimus to retire from coaching. But the women have lined up another teacher to assist Miller next year, and the team will go on. First Lego League is active in 110 countries, with more than 679,000 participants from ages 4 to 16, depending on the country. The kids learn problem solving, getting along with others, working as a team, and good sportsmanship, all key components of First Lego League. Team members choose a cause. For Johns Hill this year, it's microplastics in the ocean and how to get rid of them, and research ways to address that problem. They have to present their findings in front of judges who ask tough questions, and they have to be able to answer those questions. Teams are judged on their work, their teamwork, their ability to share credit with others, and the robotics challenge, while possibly the most well-known is only a part of their overall score. The team competed on December 21st at Unity Christian School, and the top three teams will go on to sectionals in February at the University of Illinois Urbana. From there, the top teams will go to statewide competition. Johns Hill's team did not advance, but Bartimus said she and Miller are proud of their hard work. We couldn't have asked for more, and we are proud of the way they represented our school, community, and their families, Bartimus said. The team's inexperience with most students in the activity for the first time this year, and many of them also involved in several other activities, probably contributed to their not moving on, she added. The good news is Dennis Lab School's team will move on with an award in engineering innovation. Isabella Hettinger, a sixth grader, did her part by helping create the storyboards and research that went into presentation on microplastics. You meet people you might not know otherwise, she said, of her interest in First Lego League. You might even make some new friends along the way. Five photographs accompany this article. Two are in color, and the last three are in black and white. All are attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first, in color, is captioned, Liz Bartimus assigns a role to sixth grader Kylie Barnes during a practice for a First Lego League competition at Johns Hill Magnet School in Decatur on Thursday. And the second, also in color, is captioned, seventh graders Shashank Chawla and Parker Springer test run their robots' actions in rehearsal for a First Lego League competition at Johns Hill Magnet School. The last three photos are in black and white. The first is captioned, "Liz Bartimus looks at the trophy case of awards won by the first Lego League at Johns Hill Magnet School." The second is captioned, "Liz Bartimus leads Shashank Chawla, Damian Santana, and Parker Springer in rehearsal for a first Lego League competition on Thursday." And the last photo is captioned, "Sixth grader Kylie Barnes programs a robot in practice for a first Lego League competition at Johns Hill Magnet School." Economy. Deporting migrants could hurt agriculture. Farming, food-related industries rely heavily on immigrant workers, by Nada Hassanain, Stateline.org. If President-elect Donald Trump follows through on his pledge to deport millions of immigrants, it could upend the economies of states where farming and other food-related industries are crucial, and where labor shortages abound. Immigrants make up about two-thirds of the nation's crop farmers, according to the U.S. Department of Labor, and roughly 2 in 5 of them are not legally authorized to work in the United States. Agricultural industries such as meatpacking, dairy farms, and poultry and livestock farms also rely heavily on immigrants. "We have 5 to 6 employees that do the work that nobody else will do. We wouldn't survive without them," said Bruce Lampman, who owns Lampman Dairy Farm in Bruno, Idaho. His farm, which has been in the family 3 decades, has 350 cows producing about 26,000 pounds of milk a day. "My business and every agriculture business in the U.S. will be crippled if they want to get rid of everybody who does the work," said Lampman, adding that his workers are worried about what's to come. Anita Alves Pena, a Colorado State University professor of economics who studies immigration, noted many agricultural employers already can't find enough laborers. "Without farm subsidies or other protections to make up for the loss of immigrant workers," she said, "the harm to state economies could be significant." Farmers across the country, producers in a lot of different parts, are often talking about labor shortages. And that's even with the current status quo of having a fairly high percentage of unauthorized individuals in the workforce, Pena said. "A policy like this, if it was not coupled with something else, would exacerbate that. Employers have a hard time hiring enough farm laborers because such workers generally are paid low wages for arduous work." In addition to hiring immigrant laborers who are in the country illegally, agricultural employers rely on the federal H-2A visa program. Those visas usually are for seasonal work, often for about 6 to 10 months, but can be extended for up to 3 years before a worker must return to their home country. Employers must pay H-2A workers a state-specific minimum wage and provide no-cost transportation and housing. Still, employers' applications for H-2A visas soared in the past 18 years, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, a trend reflecting the shortage of U.S.-born laborers willing to do the work. The number of H-2A positions surged from just over 48,000 in 2005 to more than 378,000 in 2023. But agricultural employers that operate year-round, such as poultry, dairy, and livestock producers, can't use the seasonal visa to fill gaps, according to the USDA. Farmers also employ foreign nationals who have temporary protected status under a 1990 law that allows immigrants to remain if the U.S. determine their home countries are unsafe because of violence or other reasons. There are about 1.2 million people in the U.S. under the program or eligible for it. Many have been here for decades, but Trump threatened to end the program. Immigration advocates want a pathway for H-2A workers to gain permanent legal status, and agricultural trade organizations are pushing for an expansion of the H-2A program to include year-round operations. The National Milk Producers Federation says it's too early to say how it would cope with mass deportations under the Trump administration. But the group states it strongly supports efforts to pass agriculture labor reform that provides permanent legal status to current workers and their families and gives dairy farmers access to a workable guest worker program. Immigrants make up 51% of labor at dairy farms across states, and farms that employ immigrants produce nearly 80% of the nation's milk supply, according to the organization. Adam Croissant, former vice president of research and development at yogurt company Chobani, which has manufacturing plants in Idaho and New York, said he's seen a lot of misinformation about immigrants' workforce contributions. The dairy industry as a whole understands that without immigrant labor, the dairy industry doesn't exist, Croissant said. It's as simple as that. Tom Super, a spokesperson for the National Chicken Council, lambasted U.S. immigration policy and said the poultry industry wants a stable, legal, and permanent workforce. The chicken industry is heavily affected by our nation's immigration policy, or, more pointedly, lack thereof. The system is broken, and Washington has done nothing to fix it, Super wrote in an email. Holidays. Kwanzaa continues to see growth in popularity, by Graham Lee Brewer, Associated Press. Since its founding in 1966, Kwanzaa has become a nationally recognized celebration of African culture and community in the United States, and also is celebrated in countries with large African descendant populations. The holiday, which serves as a nationwide communal event, reinforcing self-determination and unity in the face of oppression, spans 7 days from the day after Christmas through New Year's Day. It is observed in large city-sponsored events, as well as in smaller communities and homes nationwide. Kwanzaa has grown in popularity in the decades since its founding and is celebrated by 3% of the country, according to a 2019 AP-NORC survey. Former presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama all released statements commemorating the holiday, and the U.S. Postal Service began issuing Kwanzaa stamps in 1997. It is not recognized as a federal holiday. Kwanzaa's origins. Kwanzaa emerged during the Black Freedom Movement of the 1960s as a way to reconnect Black communities in the U.S. with important African cultural traditions, severed by the transatlantic slave trade. It also promotes unity and liberation. It was also shaped by that defining decade of fierce strivings and struggles for freedom, justice, and associated goods waged by Africans and other peoples of color all over the world in the 1960s. Maulana Karenga, the holiday's founder, wrote in his annual Kwanzaa address in 2023. Kwanzaa thus came into being, grounded itself, and grew as an act of freedom, an instrument of freedom, a celebration of freedom, and a practice of freedom. Karenga, an African-American author, activist, and professor, founded Kwanzaa following the Watts riots, also known as the Watts Rebellion, in Los Angeles in 1965. Karenga described Kwanzaa as a political motivator holiday in an interview with Henry Louis Gates Jr. for PBS. The idea is for African and African-descended people to come together around family, community, and culture, so we can be in spaces where, in Dr. Karenga's words, we feel fully African and fully human at the same time, said Janine Bell, president and artistic director at the Elegba Folklore Society in Richmond, Virginia. The basics. Many people who observed Kwanzaa, which is a secular holiday, celebrated alongside religious festivals such as Christmas. People of any faith, race, or ethnic background can participate. The name Kwanzaa derives from Mutanda ya Kwanzaa, a Swahili phrase meaning first fruits of or first harvest. The final A was added to the name to accommodate the 7 children present at the first Kwanzaa, each of whom was given a letter to represent. The holiday is governed by 7 principles, known collectively as the Nguzo Saba, and a different principle is celebrated each day, Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, Ujima, collective work and responsibility, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Nia, purpose, Kumba, creativity, and Imani, faith. The Nguzo Saba is represented by a candle holder with 7 candles called a kinara. Each night, one of those candles is lit. The candles are the same colors as the Kwanzaa flag, black representing the people, red their struggle, and green their hope. Large Kwanzaa celebrations happen across the country every year in cities, including Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Detroit. These events often feature storytellers, music, and dance. Bell said the theme at this year's Capital City Kwanzaa Festival in Richmond is knowledge of self, and an African descendant will be selected by drawing a name from a fishbowl to win a free DNA test so they can learn where the descendants come from. The holiday is also observed in individual homes, often focusing on children, because they are key to the survival of culture and the development of community. This concept of children and the future they embody is often represented symbolically by corn. Jail escapee gets 6 years in prison by Tony Reed, Decatur. The prisoner who made a successful, but brief, escape from the Macon County Jail wound up getting a bigger prison sentence for that than the original weapons charge for which he was being held. Ryan W. Johnson pleaded guilty to a charge of being a felon who escaped from a penal institution and was punished with a 6-year sentence by Judge Rodney Forbes. The 33-year-old defendant also took a plea deal that saw him admit to having been a felon in possession of a weapon. Forbes sentenced him to another 2 years on that charge, but ordered the sentence to run concurrently with the 6-year term. Johnson was originally booked into the jail after being arrested August 7th by members of the Decatur Police Department's Community Action Team. This squad targets weapons offenses and had confronted a group of men at a boarded-up house in the 1200 block of North Church Street, police said was linked to a drug and gun crime. Johnson was armed with an illegally owned gun and took off running, but was soon chased down and caught. The defendant was given trustee status while housed in the jail, which means he got privileges and a little more latitude to move about in return for doing certain tasks and chores. At 5:55 p.m. October 7th, he took advantage of his duties working in a kitchen to slip out and escape, but was tracked down and back in custody by 7:29 p.m. that day. Asked at the time how police were able to find him so quickly, Macon County Sheriff Jim Root told the Herald and Review, old-fashioned police work. He said his deputies had worked with the Decatur Police Department and the U.S. Marshals Service, and they had found Johnson at an address close to the empty house on Church Street where he had been first arrested. Root said jail procedures had been subject to an extensive review in the wake of the escape and corrective actions taken. Johnson was sentenced at a court hearing December 12th, but it wasn't all custodial bad news for him. He ended up getting a 52-day credit off his sentence to reflect his work as a trustee before he escaped. Educator switches to Alpaca Enterprise by Crystal Reed, Illinois Farmer Today, Rio. Kathy Albert of Rio in Knox County grew up saving creatures small and large. She went to college for pre-vet and walked out as a teacher. But her love of animals never changed. Since 2000, she has been surrounded by alpacas, specifically Surrey alpacas, on her farm, Heartland Creations Alpacas, LLC. A baby alpaca is called a crea, and the high school English teacher wants people to know she misspelled creations on purpose. Albert spent 18 years in education, most of that as a high school principal. She went full-time in the alpaca business in 2012. She said most farmers have huacaya alpacas, which are fuzzy, but hers look like they have dreadlocks when they are in full fleece, and they have silk ear fiber. She has between 40 to 50 animals at a time. Her interest in alpaca farming was sparked by an article that advertised an alpaca farm for sale. Albert said she bought the property and her first alpaca when it was less than 24 hours old. She knew it would be 3 years before that animal would produce a baby. When she first got into it, she focused on breed stock. But then, in 2008, she started diversifying into fibers. She uses fiber to create items to sell in her store. Socks, mittens, yarn, teddy bears, alpaca ornaments, fiber art and art kits, dryer balls, throws, rugs, novelty items, and more. Alpaca fiber is hypoallergenic, 4 times warmer than wool and wicks away moisture from the body, Albert said. She said they process all the fiber off the alpacas they raise, and then they work with co-ops. Albert also has an interest in agritourism. She said the animals are approachable and have attractive personalities. On September 28th through 29th, she held a National Alpaca Farm Days open house. The event allowed visitors to shop, get photos, and visit with the alpacas and play farm-themed carnival games. After Thanksgiving, she holds a farm store open house. Albert said she also sets up at vendor events in the warm months. Heartland Creations Alpacas, LLC, is also a harvest host site, a subscription service for self-contained RVers where they can make reservations. As long as those coming to agree to patronize the farm store, there's no reservation fee to stay at the farm, Albert said. Albert sells real estate and helps small businesses with startup plans, in addition to having the alpaca farm. I enjoy helping people, but I wish I had more time on the farm, she said. Man drives himself into 7-year sentence by Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur man with a distinctive silver Chrysler 300 car that the police came to regard as a mobile crime scene has been sent to prison for 7 years. Sworn affidavits from the Decatur Police Department said the vehicle associated with Tamarian J. Myers was involved in 3 car chases with law enforcement in April alone. It was also identified by witnesses at the scene of a drive-by shooting involving a rifle. Myers' history of successfully running from the law came to an abrupt end on the night of April 28th, after he fled from a traffic stop in the 1100 block of North Taylor Avenue. He had zipped along 30 miles per hour speed limit streets at speeds of 90 miles an hour, but was stopped after officers got ahead of him and shredded the Chrysler's tires with spike strips near Montgomery Place. A sworn affidavit signed by Officer Carlins Nance said Myers, 19, bailed out and took off on foot, but was arrested after a short chase that ended in the backyard of a house in the 1600 block of West Forest Avenue. A search of the car turned up a .45 caliber handgun fitted with a device that converted it into a submachine gun. Nance did not say whether police could prove Myers had been involved in the previous vehicle pursuits or the drive-by shooting. But he did note that Myers has a history of encounters with police over the unlawful possession of firearms and has never held a FOIA card. Myers had denied charges of armed violence, possession of a gun converted to fire as an automatic weapon, and the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. He had been scheduled for a Macon County Circuit Court jury trial on December 16th, but that was scrubbed and the defendant appeared in court on December 20th and said he was ready to take a plea deal negotiated by defense attorney Caleb Brown. Myers then pleaded guilty to the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon charge, and Judge Jeffrey Geisler agreed to dismiss the other counts. And in the same hearing, Myers also admitted an unrelated charge of theft involving property with a value of more than $10,000. Geisler sentenced him to another 7 years on that offense, but ordered the custodial term to run concurrently with the other 7-year sentence. Illinois data breach exposes 1 million records, 4,700 Social Security numbers. By David C.L. Bauer, The Telegraph, Alton, Illinois. Protected personal information of more than 1 million people, including about 4,700 Social Security numbers, was accessed from Illinois Department of Human Services files in April, the agency confirmed last week. State agencies are required under the Illinois Personal Information Protection Act to notify the news media of certain reportable breaches of security. In a statement, the Illinois Department of Human Services said it experienced a privacy breach on April 25th when a phishing campaign was used to access a number of employee accounts and the files associated with the accounts. Phishing involves sending seemingly legitimate requests for personal or sensitive information, such as passwords or account numbers. IDHS said the files that were accessed included Social Security numbers for 4,704 people. In addition, public assistance account information was accessed for more than 1.1 million people. While that information did not include Social Security numbers, it did have names, public assistant account numbers, and some combination of addresses, birth date, Illinois State Board of Education student information system identification numbers, and cell phone numbers. Upon learning of the phishing incident, IDHS worked in partnership with the Illinois Department of Innovation and Technology to investigate the extent of the breach and to determine which individuals were included, according to the statement. This was an in-depth forensic analysis followed by a manual review of all compromised files to determine the nature of the breach. IDHS continues to train its employees on how to avoid and report phishing attempts. Written notices were sent to those whose Social Security numbers were involved and whose current address was on file. Those notices provide details about available actions, including credit monitoring. Decatur Area Poets. Two events scheduled for Madden Auditorium by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Area Poets member Jim Wilkerson will hold a book release event 1 p.m. Saturday, December 28th, in the Madden Auditorium at the Decatur Public Library. Wilkerson will do a reading from his latest collection, Winter Poems, and the book will be available for purchase for $10. He will also sign copies following the event. A second event celebrating the release of Inkwell, a collection of poetry by Decatur Area Poets, and the winners of the local high school poetry contest will be 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, in the Madden Auditorium. The high school poets will be in attendance. Happy birthday for Thursday, December 26, 2024. You are strong, reassuring, and hardworking. You like to be busy. People rely on you. This year has been a time of fresh beginnings for you. Next year will be more laid back and focused on meaningful relationships. Seek out people who have your best interests at heart. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review for Thursday, December 26, 2024. Please stay tuned.